둘, 셋, 파!
For Hey Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska, name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Here I am.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Yeah, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for making your way here and checking out the series. Please do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out. Three brand new interviews every single week, so it's a great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover some new ones at iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, Audible, Red Circle, or YouTube for the video versions. Anywhere you get your podcast from, subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And that's me. I'm Kyle Meredith. Today, I get to talk with Pink Floyd's Nick Mason. We're going to be hearing about his latest tour with Saucer Full of Secrets. That's the all-star band that brings the Floyd's pre-Dark Side catalog back to life. And let's see, Nick and I are going to discuss how the songs have changed over the years, how the legendary band went against the R&B trends during their 60s startup, hearing David Bowie cover See Emily Play for his Pinups record, and misremembering one of his own influences of Chico Hamilton. Nick's also going to dig into the transitional moments of the albums Atom Heart Mother and Metal, talk about the band's reputation for arguments, and what it's like being the middleman between Roger Waters and David Gilmour. We also get to hear about recently creating a new Pink Floyd song, and if he foresees any more from that partnership, as well as the story behind the just-released Animals 2018 remix. So let's get into it. We're talking Saucer Full of Secrets and the Echoes Tour. It's Kyle Meredith with Nick Mason of Pink Floyd.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're, Saucer Full of Secrets, back on tour once again. You got the Echoes Tour. What round is this for you guys?
Well, it's actually the continuation of something that we've been waiting 2 years to get back on the road. We finished up in, I guess it was sort of 2019 or something, expecting to be out again shortly. And it's taken, as I say, at least 2 years to get back. And now, of course, we're hopelessly overexcited at the prospect of playing again.
So when you launched this project, and for people that, you know, are still learning what this is, I mean, this is you and some great performers, some all-star performers, doing the earlier pre-Dark Side catalog of Pink Floyd. When you launched this, did you think of this as an ongoing thing? Was it sort of meant to be a one-off tour and now it's taken longer? I mean, what was your concept?
Well, I think you always go into these things hoping that they might become longer-term concepts. But I think we felt we need to be pretty realistic about it. And so we sort of put toes in the water, you could say, rather gently to sort of see how it went. But I think from the really once we'd started playing together and sort of worked out really a way of doing things, we enjoyed it so much, it was obvious we were going to try and make it work at whatever level.
I enjoyed the live album that you all already put out a couple of years ago on this. I mean, hearing the way that you do these and really sort of resurrecting these songs for a lot of us fans, do you find that your relationship to these older songs have changed or carried on in a different way as you've gotten reacquainted with them?
Well, I think the thing that has surprised me is when you start dismantling or sort of looking at the songs properly with the idea of playing them, how different they are to how I remembered them originally. They are more complex, in fact, than I'd thought, which was quite tiring for me because that meant I actually had to learn them rather than just go to my memory bank. My memory bank was clearly empty. And so it was sort of restarting a bit. But I have to say, I've enjoyed the whole thing from the rehearsals all the way through to the recording.
Well, they are such unique songs. I mean, the compositions as they are. I mean, when I look back, it's before my time, but I mean, it seemed like so many bands were pulling from the blues as a typical reference point. And I never got that from you all. Like, what were you pulling from? Because in that instance, you were also creating something, which is, you know, not an easy feat. I mean, few artists are able to really do that.
Yeah, I really can't explain it properly. The point you make about the blues is interesting because at the time, everyone, including us, wanted to be an R&B band. And I think there was the point at which it became clear there was no room for another one. We'd better find something else. And then we just, Sid's right. You tend to be directed by the writers to some extent, because that's what you've got that makes you unique. You really can't expect to make a career out of being the sort of fifth band to play Crossroads that night. And I think Sid's writing was so varied. That's one of the things that comes across to me now. You know, there's sort of pastoral type, almost English folk song type thing. And then you'll get something a bit more to Lucifer Sam, a bit sort of odder. But and then finally, of course, things like Interstellar Overdrive, which are completely off the wall in comparison to some old blues band.
Interstellar Overdrive, when I was younger, I think it was actually, I heard Pearl Jam cover that as an intro before. I think I heard the original.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which is fun. Yeah, I mean, there have been those moments too. And lately I've gone back to Bowie's pinups. I've got some Bowie over my shoulder and hearing him do See Emily Play, which is, you know, such a fun version. What is that something like he reached out about? Do you remember when that happened?
No, I don't. But I remember him. I think Bowie was influenced by Sid. You know, he liked, I think, everything Sid did. I'll tell you what I did like was when Bowie played with David at the Albert Hall and did Comfortably Numb. Mm-hmm. I thought that was absolutely fantastic.
Just incredible. You brought up Lucifer Sam. And again, I was going back and listening to this live album that you all put out. And I don't know why it hadn't occurred to me, but you know, that's you, as we're talking about these early influences and as you mentioned, some of the, you know, sometimes quirkier stuff, like it seems like that fits in more of like a surf psychedelic thing, almost like what the Munsters were also doing. You know, it's like that. That's what I was like. Where did that come from?
Who knows? I mean, Sid's writing was quite extraordinary. And it, as I say, the subject matter just changed from the I Ching to a scarecrow to Bike, which is still one of the most curious songs ever, but absolutely unique. No one else goes anywhere near that.
Well, what about from your specific end of things? I was listening to one of your recent interviews, and I think you guys were talking about Set the Controls for the Heart of the Sun, and you mentioned Chico Hamilton.
Oh yeah,
like for your, you know, you've got a songwriter, and obviously you've got guitarists at the time, but for you, what do you remember that you were sort of bringing in?
Well, the weirdest thing about talking about the Chico Hamilton thing is that it came, my interest in it, and still is, this is a complete fantasy. I thought in Jazz in a Summer's Day, Chico Hamilton played a drum solo using mallets. When I actually watched the movie again, I don't know, a year ago or something, to my astonishment, he hadn't got any mallets at all. He was playing with sticks. But I'd got this idea that that's where I came across this idea. And clearly it was just something in... there probably was someone else who did something with mallets. But who it was, I've no idea. So I was heavily influenced by a complete stranger.
Something about what... I think there's a term for that, but misremembering something and then building a history upon that misremembering.
Right. Yeah. Well, I qualify for that, whatever it's called.
And we'll be right back right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 80.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Kyle Meredith with Nick Mason. You know, so you, as we said, you know, you go from the very beginnings of your all's catalog and you go right up until right before. But at that point, right before Dark Side, I mean, we are hitting the metal territory right there. And it does seem like that's the moment where Pink Floyd started sounding like the bigger, you know, Dark Side version. When you guys were doing that, of course, now we are in the 70s. Did it feel like you had made that turning point? I mean, it had started a little bit with Adam Heart Mother before that, but there's something about that when you hear One of These Days, when you hear Fearless, like, oh, this is a different band. Did it feel like that?
Well, not really. What it feels like is that one's just taken, you know, you're on a road and you've taken not a wrong turning, but you've taken a turning off. Like, Adam Heart Mother is very much a project that actually doesn't repeat itself in later Pink Floyd, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And whereas I'd agree, metal absolutely is an indicator of where we're going to go. And Echoes eventually has a lot in common with Shine On, in my thinking anyway. And it's sort of interesting how these albums, some of them are very much part of a progression and some of them are experiments. Umaguma, you know, is an experiment that, again, is not repeated further down the line.
I remember finding Umaguma for the first time and it was so perfect because I'd found Miles Davis's Fillmore shows where it was the cut up stuff and I'd found Sonic Youth for the first time. I mean, talk about, and I'll go ahead and use that word, talk about a trip. That record right there is it's something else. So, you know, so you have the two bands. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure it's not fair to do the comparisons, but what are the big differences in Pink Floyd proper, where you all left off, and your Saucer Full of Secrets band?
Well, I suppose the interesting thing about it is not the differences, but the similarities. For me, what was interesting was the first night that we played as the Saucers, I think it was at Dingwalls, and I was sort of wondering what it was going to be like. And actually, it was deja vu. It was exactly, felt very similar to being with Pink Floyd in 1967, you know, with the same the same feeling, the same sort of size venue, the whole thing. I mean, you can't really compare them because one's a sort of something I did over a 50-year period. The other is something I did last week, really, is how it feels. But there's a nice element of almost picking up on Floyd things with the sources, in particular early Floyd, because of this business of being able to mess around a little bit with the music and the songs and actually try and find new things in that music that work in a different way. I mean, I love both bands. It's not that one was, someone asked me whether it was sort of hard work with Pink Floyd, although we were notorious for, or still are notorious for arguments. Actually, most of it was absolutely terrific. You know, it's a wonderful way of spending your life.
I mean, that must be something. Now you've got a band that I'm assuming might not have as much drama as
as they're the practicing. Old one. They're working themselves up.
Yeah, I'm going to ask this one for what it's worth. You know, to have been the guy who seems to sort of ride the line, you know, between Roger and David, does it feel like you're in the middle? I mean, are they asking about each other through you? Does that ever happen?
No, I think they do. No, occasionally they'll mouth off about complain about each other, but basically, I'm not really a mediator. But I get up with, you know, David and I did this Ukraine song a few months ago, which was a great thing to do. Roger came on at the Beacon Theatre 3 years ago, whatever. Great to do that. You know, I'm sorry I can't build the bridges for them, but hey, who knows?
I don't think anybody's expecting that these days. But it was nice. It was so nice to see that song come out. And we're talking about Hey, Hey, Rise Up. I mean, and completely unexpected. I don't think most people thought there would be anything new with the Pink Floyd name on it. I mean, what did it take to get to there, to that song? I mean, was it just the opportunity?
Yeah, David was probably more deeply involved politically than me anyway, because he actually has a Ukrainian daughter-in-law. But it was, he did a fantastic job. I mean, technically, it was a really interesting thing to do because he had the a cappella vocal line with no track. So we had to actually construct a backing track underneath what should have been an overdub, which is entirely the wrong way to go about making records. But sometimes that's the way things are.
But now there's something new in the world that says Pink Floyd on it. So that's either an opportunity for more things like that, or this is our final statement. And would you want this as your final statement?
No, I wouldn't particularly want it as a final statement. I think it was just a good thing to do. But I don't think it leads on to immediately putting Pink Floyd on the road. Certainly, from my point of view, I'm very happy doing the sources for the moment. It's quite exhausting just thinking of the thought of trying to put a Pink Floyd show back on the road.
I'll tell you, as a Greedy fan, I don't even need you back on the road. But if it means like you guys are just creating music, I think that's what I find exciting. You know, like right. This was a moment that wasn't a tour. This was just, you know, this is something new. Like I'm that kind of Greedy fan.
No, well, I'm not averse to looking at anything that comes up, you know, that anyone wants to do, whatever it is. I'm a bit of a tart, really. There's nothing I'd turn down.
I did also see, just quickly mentioning that the Animals, what is it, the 2018 edition remix? Like that's, what's the story there?
Because yeah, I'm really pleased we're finally getting it to come out, because of all the albums we've made, that one was technically the least proficient, I suppose. Virtually everything else was done at Air or Abbey Road or whatever. And this was done in our own studio with sort of slightly cheaper recording equipment and so on. And so it lacks the polish, perhaps, of which is interesting as well, because it was made during the punk era. And so maybe that was part of it, that there was a deliberate attempt to make it appear a little bit more sort of hard-edged and dusty. So it's actually nice to get it out and clean it up, really.
You weren't the only band that kind of got influenced to go down that road a little bit. I'm excited about this, though. I'm excited to hear this version myself and to see what you're doing again with the Saucer Full of Secrets. I mean, I know do you find that you all want to do anything original? I mean, you've inspired Gary to put out his own solo record, which was great to hear. Like, are you guys jamming on your own stuff in the background?
No, we're not. I think the problem is that the real joy of this whole operation was about playing live. Now, whether there's an audience for new songs written by this band or by Gary or whatever, I don't know. But I certainly feel that we haven't exhausted what we've started here. And I think there's more playing and there's more thinking to be done on Saucers before we start looking at new music. And whether the world has an appetite for it. That's the big thing as well. You know, you can do things for fun, but at the end of the day, you've also got to have an audience to make the whole thing work.
Looks like the audience is at least there right now. Well, I'll flip that question real quick then. Are there still songs in the catalog that you all are looking at that you haven't? I mean, have you hit that wall yet?
You know, there's a lot of material there. I think people, including myself, underestimated how much material, and it's 7 or 8 albums worth, and it includes things like which we do with the Saucers, some of the tracks from the movies, the Barbet Schroeder movies, Obscured by Clouds, and more. They were never played really live in the Floyd era. And some of them work really well as live pieces.
It's a great show. It seriously is a great show. And I cannot recommend it enough to just everybody I talk to about what you guys are doing. Nick, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me about it today. Again, this is such an honor. And enjoy that tour, man.
Thank you. No, my pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Big O thanks to Nick Mason, Saucer Full of Secrets, on tour now. Thanks to you as well for checking out the episode. Again, please do hit that subscribe button so you can get 3 new interviews sent to you every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at iTunes, Apple Podcasts, at Spotify, Podchaser, NPR, WFPK.org, Audible, Red Circle, anywhere you get your podcast from. That includes YouTube for the videos. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Then after that, head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern. An hour full of song premieres, music news, anniversary spins, bonus interviews. Again, that's Monday through Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on the old social media spots. Let's see, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all 3 of them. The address is at Kyle Meredith. So I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Very good.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.